I'm sure most of you know them. They're in the back. They're the host with the most here today. My name's Russ McCabe. I'm with the Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs, and Chaz has asked me to kick things off with a couple quick remarks. Our markers program continues to be one of the more popular things that we do. In the decade of the 80s, for instance, we did 6 for the entire 10-year period. This year we have funding for about 25 markers that recognize sites throughout the state, some on the beaten path and some a little off. Did anybody else get lost here coming here? Well, you know, if you get me above Milford, I'm in trouble. And Chaz brought me down here a couple weeks ago, and I had to admit later that it was my first trip to Viola. And I tried to follow our path in reverse, and I wound up down on Fence Post Road or some such place. I was lost. But basically, Chaz asked me just to welcome you folks on behalf of the Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs and the State Archives. Certainly one of the things that we always do at these marker dedications is praise them from whom all blessings come, for lack of a better way to put it. So I want to at the very least recognize Representative Bobby Quillen back here. Bobby and I have worked on a lot of these projects together. He's one of our more active supporters, so certainly some thanks goes to Representative Quillen.
Thank you. Nice to be here, and I want to welcome the family here, too. This is my district, and Chaz brought this to my attention. He says, you think you'll have any problem getting a marker for a historical site down in Viola? I said, Viola? Historical marker? So he told me what it was, so I had my friends on the Joint Finance Committee. I was fortunate enough for my colleagues to support this, and thanks to Chaz bringing it to our attention. We welcome you all to Viola. I'm sorry you got lost, sir.
Oh, that's okay. I'm learning. Also, I'd like to just introduce our division director, Dan Griffin, who is a native of Kent County, and probably I should have come out here with him. I'd have gotten here a little quicker.
In Viola.
Yeah. Chaz?
Okay. Before we begin with these festivities, or whatever we want to call them, when I came out here 2 weeks ago with Russ, we both looked pretty closely at this big tree back here. And the large tree you see it back before the barn. And I have to admit, like Russ got lost, I thought the few times I'd been here before it was an Osage orange tree, because I never got up close to it, and that's just kind of what it looked like from a distance. So I said, boy, that's a big Osage orange. And Mr. Kersey, who's just a real gentleman, didn't say to me, you know, son, you're wrong. He said, Osage orange. And he said, I'd always heard that was a mulberry. So we walked up close to it and saw that it was a mulberry. And Tim Caden and Ron Vickers from the Division of Parks and Recreation, big tree fans like me, came down a little bit early today and measured it. And I'm pleased to announce officially that this is a state champion white mulberry tree. It's the largest in Delaware by far. And for those of you interested in statistics, it's 13 feet 7 inches in diameter. 156 inches in circumference, 44 feet high, and a crown spread of 54 feet, and that's all totaled up in a fancy formula in points, 204 points, which makes it significantly bigger than the second largest white mulberry, which is up on Route 9 near Kogel's Corner. For those of you into small towns in Delaware, that's one of the small ones. So before we began this, I thought it was appropriate to say that we have another event to acknowledge today, and we'll make sure that the Kersey Farm mulberry gets on the official state list. So you're becoming official in more ways than one on various state registers today. If any of you know about my interest in Delaware Jewish farmers and have made the mistake of asking me a question about it, you'll know that there's nothing I love to talk about more. And so I'm going to spare you most of that today, and rather than preparing remarks, I just prepared an outline, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about the history of this property and Jewish immigrant settlement on farms in Delaware, just to put this story in perspective. We're very fortunate that we have the Kerseys with us, who bought the farm from the Benioffs, that three of the Benioffs' grandchildren are here, and you'll be hearing from them later, and they'll be unveiling this. And so I think that if you want the details, you can talk to me or to any of them. But what we're really here today to do, I think, is to honor two very historic occasions. The first is the 100th anniversary of the settlement of the Benioffs, who were the first Jewish farmers in Delaware. And the leaders, not only here being the first, but in helping to bring other people here and ultimately being responsible for the 24 other families and family farms that were eventually established. It's also historic in that this is the first historic marker in Delaware that acknowledges a Jewish activity or event or place. And I think that's very significant as well, and I think it's a tribute to the marker program that it's blossomed as it has, and it's starting to acknowledge all facets of Delaware history and not just Revolutionary War heroes and the like. For those of you who might be at all knowledgeable about Delaware Jewish history, you might be familiar with some of the very earliest Sephardic seafarers and traders who were here in colonial times. Perhaps most people think of Wilmington when they think of Jewish history, because there's a large Jewish community there with a history going back well over 100 years. People in this area are probably familiar with some of the Jewish shopkeepers and retailers and business people in just about every small town in downstate Delaware. If you go from Wilmington to the north and Sussex County to the south, you'll see Jewish names in many places memorializing important people and places in Jewish history, from the Herman Court Building in downtown Wilmington to Stein Highway in Seaford. So there's been Jewish settlement and activity all throughout the state. But until fairly recently, there was no acknowledgement of Jewish farmers, mainly because no one really in modern times knew that there had ever been any farmers who were Jewish. And what little was known about them didn't add up to much of a story. It may beg the question, I think this whole event begs the question, why were the Jewish farmers here? Or how did Jews get onto farms as opposed to the cities where we usually associate Jews with urban areas? Most of you, I think, know that a little over 100 years ago, it was very oppressive times in Russia and Eastern Europe. Jews were leaving literally by the millions from those countries and heading to Western Europe and the United States and South America. And they were, most of them in North America, landing in New York City. The majority of those folks lived on the Lower East Side. That was an oppressive environment as well. They were living in tenements, and that was really not a very good place to be. There was an attempt on the part of some of the wealthier Jews in the United States and in Europe at that time to help get those people out of the city. To some extent, it was an altruistic objective. They wanted to get these potential farmers out of the city and into healthy pastoral settings to be farmers, work with their hands, get back to the soil, and they raised money to help do that. They were also wealthy German Jews who really didn't think too much of their co-religionists, who were really not as cultivated as they were, pardon the pun. And they really wanted to get some of these folks out of New York City and away from them. And they thought the best thing they could do was to raise money and give them mortgages and loans and technical assistance and get them far away from New York City, which they did very, very successfully. There was a back-to-the-soil movement from taking these European immigrants from their native countries to the United States, to South America, and to Palestine at the time. My personal involvement in this started about 10 years ago when I first learned or was told that there were Jewish farmers who had been settled in Kent County in the early part of this century by an organization known as the Jewish Agriculture Society. And I read a little blurb in a downstate Delaware Jewish history. I saw that and assumed that it was just an error, because I think if any of the rest of you had seen that, you'd say, well, it just doesn't sound right. It just doesn't fit. I thought they had the wrong state, or maybe Kent County in New Jersey, because I heard that there were Jewish farmers in New Jersey. So I assumed it was in error and then kind of forgot about it. But my curiosity got the better of me, and I stopped at the Kent County Courthouse about 10 years ago just to look this up and confirm that, in fact, this Jewish Agriculture Society didn't have anything to do with this area. Turns out I was wrong, not the first time. And I started digging, and I found that, in fact, there were 25 farms in the state that were settled by Jewish immigrants, 23 of them here in Kent County, and one in Newark on the Pennsylvania line, and one down near Woodland Ferry in Sussex County. So I focused my research on Kent County and very quickly learned that the whole thing started right here with a family named Benioff. I really knew very little about them, but I started digging, and let me just tell you a little bit about the Benioffs. And I'm sure if I say anything that is incorrect or not in keeping with the family's history, they'll let you know. And I must admit, much of what I've learned, other than from document research, is rather anecdotal, and a lot of it came from the family. So if you don't like what I say in Benioff's, I got it from one of your relatives. Fight among yourselves about that. But what we do know about the Benioffs is that they left Russia during those oppressive times in the 1880s. Mr. Benioff, Isaac, was actually born before the American Civil War. So by the time he got here, he was already middle-aged, or an older man in those times, actually. He was a furrier by trade. He had two wives in Russia, one after the other. And by the time he came to the United States, he was married to his third wife, Ida. And he had children in Russia who came with him, elder children. They lived, traveled around the eastern United States a little bit. I know that for sure they were in Cleveland for a while. They were back in New York, and as the story goes, and I believe this is true, they had he and the third wife, Isaac and Ida, had a child named Sarah. Sarah was very young and was in poor health, presumably with tuberculosis, might have been another disease. And someone advised them the best thing to do for her was to get her out into the country and into the fresh air if she was going to survive. And somehow, from that problem that they had, they ended up here. We really don't know how they got to this particular farm. There was a Jewish organization known as HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, that helped settle people outside of the city, but they had never settled anyone in Delaware before or after that. We also know that the Benioffs came from the same community in Russia as the Topkis family from Wilmington, and a very prominent family. And it's very possible that one of the Topkises had a connection with people here, or knew of a farm that was for sale, and directed them to this spot. But Isaac and Ida Benioff arrived sometime after the winter of 1897. They bought this farm, still intact, as owned by the Kerseys. And they began farming. Like almost all of the people who followed them, they didn't know anything about farming and had a really rough time of it early on. The only reason this farm survived, and they stayed until 1919, 22 years, was because they had help from their neighbors, and primarily because Mr. Benioff, as a furrier, would leave the farm every winter and go back to New York City and ply the fur trade. Apparently he was very talented and very capable in that area and was able to make enough money in the winter to come back and support the farm. I guess things haven't changed much. It's pretty tough to maintain a farm just living on the farm, and he had to have a second income working in the city. He had an older son who was also a furrier, had picked up the trade with him in Russia, and the son eventually bought a fur business and fur shop in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Later on, Mr. Benioff would go to Allentown and work in the winter as well, and sometimes weekends. He could just pick up the train and be up there fairly quickly, unlike today. And eventually, the son left the business, and in 1919, the whole Benioff, what's known as the Mishbucha, the whole family, moved up to Allentown and was in the business in Allentown until, is the business closed? The business closed just a few years ago, so that business continued for most of this century. During the time that we were here, there's some things that we know about them. We know that they were typical farmers. They raised vegetables and fruit. They probably had a small orchard, some grains. They had a few animals. Surprisingly, one of the sons, I think it was it Abe, who was in the 4-H, raised pigs. I don't know if he had pigs or just a pig, which is not a pig. Which is not something you would normally think of on a Jewish farm, but he raised a pig, and presumably he raised it because it was a 4-H project, and he took it up to, I don't know if it was 4-H, I don't know even know if that existed then, but the equivalent, and he took it up to the state fair then in Wilmington, and won first prize. And so I think that's a notable event in Delaware Jewish history as well. As far as we know, he stayed with one of the Topkis families while he was there, which was probably quite an experience for him, because at that time they were well-to-do and lived in a beautiful new home in Wilmington, and it was probably an experience for him to leave the farm where he and his brothers and sister often walked around barefoot to go up to Wilmington to stay in an elegant residence in that city. The Benioffs were only here about 3 years when they were joined by relatives. Ida had a sister named Sophia. and she and her husband, Israel Mechanic, came here and bought some really awful farmland swamp just west of here. They almost starved to death in the first few years, but with, I think, help from the family and friends, they were able to buy a farm just about a mile north of here. And so the Mechanics lived here as well, and the two sisters, I'm sure, comforted one another in their isolation from their friends and family in the city. A parenthetical note about them, their maiden name was Bayless. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with Eastern European Jewish history, but back in the 19-teens, there was a famous Bayless trial, the Bayless blood libel trial. It was one of the last, perhaps the last time in history that there was a challenge, a claim that a Jew had murdered a Christian and used the blood to make Passover matzah. And this became a major cause around the whole world to undo the injustice of the charge against Mendel Bayless. Mendel was Sophie and Ida's first cousin. So to give you some sense of what was going on in the world and how these people's lives were connected to the rest of what was happening in the world, they were living here on the farm, struggling as farmers in the only Jewish people for miles, reading probably weekly the Jewish and English newspapers that came into their home, and reading about their cousin Mendel, who was on trial in Russia. A jury of peasants acquitted him, and it was a major event in world history. And they had to live it and experience it vicariously here, probably through the Yiddish newspapers that they received. A little bit just about the Jewish Agriculture Society. You may be curious who they were. It was founded by a man named Baron de Hirsch, a very wealthy German Jew who committed a major part of his fortune, in fact, I believe his entire fortune, to helping the oppressed Jews of Russia, Romania, and other countries in Eastern Europe. He spent literally millions and millions of dollars, which at the time was worth a lot more than $1 million today. His initial plan was to try to settle Jews in Palestine. That wasn't very successful for lack of cooperation from the Ottoman Empire and then later the British government. And so he decided to try the United States. He made a major contribution, I couldn't tell you how much, but it must have been an incredible sum, to a group called the Jewish Agriculture Society. And their purpose was to help settle immigrant Jews on the farm, the Benioffs being a very good example. And they did that primarily through two methods. They provided second mortgages, so that if someone could get a mortgage on the farm, they would provide that second mortgage that could just make the difference, or sometimes a chattel mortgage to allow them to buy equipment or farm animals. They also provided technical assistance, which was the first technical assistance program of its time in the United States. And it was actually the precursor of the agricultural extension program that is now so common around the United States. It was first implemented by the Jewish Agriculture Society. They put out publications in Yiddish and in English. The Benioffs and others probably received their monthly copy of the Jewish Farmer, sometimes in Yiddish and sometimes in English or both. And they provided their technical assistance and connected people that way. The Jewish Agriculture Society, though, was organized in 1900, which was 3 years after the Benioffs arrived, and the same year that the relatives, the Mechanics, arrived down the road. So they, the Benioffs and the Mechanics got here on their own, and as I said, we don't know how that came about. But what we do know is that sometime around 1912 or 1913, either Mr. Benioff or Mr. Mechanic, from reading the Jewish media, Jewish press, or perhaps from their visits to New York, learned about the Jewish Agriculture Society, and were the first two families to receive mortgages. And at that time, they were still struggling, as most farmers were in the early teens. And they were able to get second loans, second mortgages on their properties, and they began to prosper a lot more after that. It helped them through the difficult times of World War I. Within about a year, the Jewish Agriculture Society then helped settle other farmers in this area, and eventually throughout the state, 23 other families followed. The first few clustered immediately west, north and west of here, and then another cluster out west of Dover in the Hartley area. Very few of those people were all here at the same time, mainly because they didn't know anything about farming, they bought poor soils, they were unhappy and isolated, and a lot of the farms failed. So it's a credit to the Benioffs that they were able to survive 22 years, and the Mechanic family, the relatives, were here into the early 1930s. Most of the other folks who were here lasted anywhere from 6 months to 40 or 50 years, but they're almost all gone. There are some remnant families. Of course, we have the relatives of the Benioffs here who aren't farmers, though I understand they either, some of them may be gentlemen farmers, and they can tell you about where they live. The Seidel family in Hartley, the Seidel egg farm that I think most of you are familiar with. There's probably no one from Delaware who hasn't eaten a Seidel egg. That was a Jewish farm settled in the first in the teens and later resettled in the 1920s by the Seidel family. And they're the only Jewish farm in Delaware that's still in business and still in agriculture. And the Markowitz family that many people from this area may know over near Canterbury and Andrews Lake, who farmed from about 1922 and, in fact, still own some of the family farm, but they're now farmed by tenants. So we're nearing the very end of this story, my story here, and also this, the story of the individual farm families. Just a few other comments. I mentioned that life on the farm here was probably typical. It was typical for them as farmers, but I don't think it was any way typical in terms of their lifestyle and their culture. They came from Eastern Europe. They spoke with heavy Russian and or Yiddish accents. They probably had some difficulty communicating with their neighbors. Many of the Jewish families kept kosher homes, which meant that they wouldn't share food with their neighbors. They've given the impression that they were kind of standoffish or not very friendly. Although they had excellent relationships with their neighbors because of their dietary habits, very often the intermingling wasn't the same as it would have been for non-Jewish neighbors. Holidays were celebrated. It's believed that the first organized Jewish high holiday worship services in Kent or Sussex County was held on this property sometime in the teens. They brought a rabbi or some learned person in from probably Wilmington or maybe Philadelphia with a Torah scroll and conducted services right in this house. And when they did that, some of the farmers from the neighboring areas would come, as well as a family from Harrington that owned a clothing store, a family named Morris. And for several years, they gathered here for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and had services in this house. The families would stay here for those days, the adults in the house and the kids in the barn. And apparently that was a pattern anytime the relatives came from the city. I mentioned that one of the objectives of this program is to get people out of the city. They also came out in the summertime, just for temporary relief. And I understand that there was a huge number of people in this house, maybe even camped out outside in 1918 during the flu epidemic. And the barn was crowded with their children. And I've heard stories from Abe and Shim Benioff about the wonderful time they had when the relatives came, because they could sleep out in the barn and have a good time. So life as their life as farmers was probably typical, but their individual and personal lives was distinctly different, mainly because of their religion. These folks contributed in very important ways to the current Jewish community of Dover. In 1915, I believe, might have been 1914, they organized, the farmers organized themselves into a chapter of the National Jewish Farmers Organization, and they called their group the First Jewish Farmers Association of Dover. There's no evidence that they ever did anything more than meet once and organize, but they did meet, and there were at least a half a dozen members. Mr. Benioff and Mr. Mechanic were two of the officers, and I think they had visions that this was going to be a large Jewish farming community. It never happened, and it's highly unlikely that the group ever met beyond World War I. But they did get organized, and it was the first organized Jewish group. Some would argue that Jewish groups below the canal still aren't organized, but it was the first organized Jewish group below the canal in 1915. And there wasn't any other organization, community organization, for Jewish people in this area until the 1930s. So it was very important. They were also very involved in the early Jewish social organizations that led to, not these particular individuals, but the other farmers were involved in Jewish social organizations that in the 1930s and 40s led to the establishment of Congregation Beth Shalom, which is the only synagogue in downstate Delaware. I probably talked long enough. I think you'd probably all like to see the sign and hug the tree, and also to hear from Clara. Not Clara, excuse me, from Edith, Clara's daughter. I should add one thing before I introduce Edith. I should tell you that she's the daughter of Clara Benioff, who was born on this farm and raised here. She was very smart and well-educated in her time and became a school teacher. And while she lived on this farm, she worked at the school, the one-room schoolhouse, maybe two rooms, in Rising Sun, and was a school teacher until the family moved to Allentown. I'd like to conclude my remarks, I guess, by before we introduce Edith and let her speak on behalf of the family and have the family remove the cover. I mentioned that their lives here, the Benioffs and all the other Jewish farmers, as far as farming goes, was pretty typical, and there's probably not much of a story there. You could take any other 25 farms around Kent County and tell the same story about Delaware agriculture during that period. But their lives here as Jews was something, I think, very interesting, very important. And the fact that they lived here actively as Jews and lived Jewish lives long before there was an organized Jewish community is a very important part of Delaware history and perhaps the most important thing that we're acknowledging today. I was not able to talk directly to any of the original settlers as I did my research. I have one of the original settlers on tape. And I was able to talk to lots of children and lots of neighbors and lots of friends, but we really don't have the words of any of these folks, and so we can only speculate what they said. We have statistical information and documents and all kinds of family stories, but to actually have the words that they said, there's nothing. One thing we do know, though, is that most of them had some level of involvement in Jewish ritual in their homes, whether it was observing the Sabbath, keeping kosher dietary practices. And there would have been one prayer that they would have said in this house repeatedly on different occasions and would have been said in their neighbors' homes. And since they aren't here to speak for themselves and we can't say with any certainty what words were spoken by them, I think it might be appropriate to repeat that one prayer that we know they said here and is actually quite relevant to what we say today. To those of you who are familiar with it, please join me, and I'll translate it. It was Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shechachiyanu V'Kiyamanu V'Higiyanu Lazman Hazeh. Praise be the Lord our God, who has given us life, who has sustained us, and brought us to this joyous occasion.
Gracious to the people of Delaware who opened their hearts and made our families feel so very welcome. The stories of Delaware that I heard all my life, of the joy of living and of the people, and they were an integral part. And the names of old families, maybe you don't remember, but Dude and Maggie Savidri, and Feeblecorn, and Kersey, and Lewis, and Satterfield, and Simon, and others, were just names we knew. And we heard about walks to school with a piece of homemade bread in their pocket for lunch and a hot yam to keep their hands warm. And they felt that they were living a good life. They didn't feel poor. They felt enriched. Their father went to New York, and he had invented some way of cutting minks. And it was a special thing, and he did earn some money with that. The second thing I want to thank is to the legislator and to the people of Delaware now who acknowledge that it was important. And we are in perpetuity grateful that one recognized what this farm was. The air is full of shades of people who are gone. I could cry for them for this moment when someone could acknowledge their happy, carefree, almost Mark Twain kind of a life. I want to, I'm sort of a family genealogist. Ida Benioff, known as Yidis, and her sister Sophie, known as Cecil, Cecil was married, but Ida Benioff came as a widow in her 20s, and she needed to have an income, and she couldn't see well enough to sew. And she was a housekeeper, and someone propositioned her, and she decided to marry. And she married Isaac Benioff, who had seven children. And I guess some of them lived on the farm from time to time. One held the mortgage on the farm, and my mother was afraid they might have to go to the poorhouse if should he ever call a mortgage. But Fred, who was came to this farm at a year and a half, he was traveling as maybe a salesman or furrier, and in Allentown, Pennsylvania, there was a milliner selling her business, and she dealt in furs, and he told his family to come, and then he enlisted in World War I. I'm full of memories, I'd like to say something about the women, because my grandfather was so much older. He was 25 years older than my grandmother, and I knew him as sort of a distant character, but I grew up with my grandmother. She was from the family. We knew of someone. She tried to tell us who, and only in later years was she happy to know it, of Levi Isaac of Berdichev, a populist rabbi, a rabbi who spoke directly to God in Yiddish, a man of the people. And that heritage of doing well, helping other people, don't look for riches, look for a good way of life. And so I think she liked being here to give her children something of that. This woman, when she was a widow, saved two Holocaust German children whom she didn't know in a transport when they needed homes in America. If I say something more about her, she was known to us as Baba and Mom Benioff and in the town. And one of the most important things was have a good name, do good things. The family was impeccably honest. I think it's carried down to all of us that we're honest in what we say, but we're honest in what we do. And we had many, many ways of being told to live good values. And it's important our whole lives. My mother, Clara, was, if one could say one thing about her, she was a mother whose children were the most important thing for her life. And the second thing she lived for was education. Her girls should have an education so they could do something, and we all did. And third was help people. I was 2 months into graduate school when she said to someone, "My daughter Edith will help you." I don't know what I knew about child behavior then. But I spent my life as a social worker in inner city schools trying to rescue children and find them their proper spot. And I can't give it up because that was what was important for me to do. I think maybe Dick or Michael could say some words if they would about what they were.
What you said is just fine.
The other thing was plant rhubarb. That was an induction.
Could we get the three grandchildren over here to remove the covers?
Did the legislature make something to the
Thank you for putting it through the legislature. We are.
Thank you very much.
But we're not. I want to tell you that they said that you have a dollar of
money. Before you leave,
one hundred Jewish farmers.
Funniest thing.
The plaque says, "Immigrant Jewish farmers." Delaware's first Jewish farmers, Isaac and Ida Benioff, settled here in 1897. Like those to follow, they were recent immigrants fleeing poverty and oppression in their native Russia. Between 1912 and 1929, the Jewish Agricultural Society, based in New York City, provided loans to the Benioffs and other Jewish farmers who moved to Kent County as part of a national Back to the Soil movement. After World War II, the Jewish farmers remaining in the area contributed to the organization of the Jewish community in southern Delaware and the establishment of the first synagogue in Dover.
The plaque is blue with yellow lettering embossed on it, and it's two-sided, same words on both sides. It's about, roughly a little less than 3 feet tall and a little less than 4 feet wide, and it has the crest of the state of Delaware on the top. A very attractive plaque.